Welcome to the Psychology World podcast with me, Connor Whiteley, psychology student and international best-selling psychology author of over 30 psychology books, bringing you the latest psychology news, fascinating psychology topics and more each week. If you want to learn more, then please check out connorwhiteley.net/books. And don't forget to like and subscribe to the YouTube video or follow on your favourite podcast app. And here's the show. Hi everyone and welcome to episode 240 of the Psychology World podcast with me, Connor Whiteley. And today's episode is on Introduction to the Gamification of Autism. And it is Saturday the 25th of November 2023 as I record this. So today's episode is actually really a good one, and it's actually really, really interesting though, because what the gamification of autism covers is all of these so-called smart toys, all of these mobile phone apps, and basically all of these different technological solutions that are actually designed to help autistic people. So what this topic actually looks at is the research behind them, whether they're actually based on facts or basically just a guesswork. And I have to admit, because I looked at this topic during my placement year at my university, I have to admit this research topic actually changed my perspective on psychology research. This made me quite hardline about sample sizes, because most of these only have 10 participants, if that, and they're trying to claim that their sample represents every single autistic person in the entire world, which of course is stupid, and it is beyond, that just cannot happen. You cannot have 10 participants in a study and claim that's representative of the entire world, of the entire clinical population. So that's just one of the small problems we actually look at in this topic, so I really enjoyed it, and I know that you're going to as well. So what you've got that to look forward to in the content part of today's episode. So we're moving on to the psychology news section. We're reading from the British Psychological Society Research Digest, and the first one is rather interesting. I have to translate the colours. Imagine if every time you heard a hard A sound, you saw a luminous cyan colour, or every time you heard a K sound, you saw red. This is the everyday experience of a woman identified in the literature as ALE. This new study published in Consciousness and Cognition describes the atypical ways of understanding speech in a confirmed syphasy, which I probably butchered that pronunciation, so apologies, illustrating the diversity of cognitive processes. Whilst case studies are limited in what they can tell us about how the human mind works beyond a single individual, they do add depth to our understanding and at times challenge the assumptions much of our research is built on. So because I actually have no experience or basically no knowledge about this particular condition, I actually don't want to focus on that point of this article. But what I do want to focus on is the methodology, simply because Case studies, I think, can be brilliant because they can really allow us to focus on a particular person's experiences, their difficulties, their hopes, their dreams, etc. And basically, they allow us to really focus on a single person, and we can get tons of quite good information from that person though. However, case studies more generally are, I'm definitely not a fan of them because, I mean, like, if you're trying to look at quite a broad range of stuff, and if you're trying to draw conclusions that affect an entire clinical population, then I think case studies, they have very limited use. What would be better is is a large qualitative study which actually focuses on the lived experiences of multiple participants. So in like that case, case studies aren't actually that useful. But in like this particular case, because you have this one particular woman that experiences something quite profound and something very different from a lot of, at least clinically normal people, then a case study is absolutely brilliant. And then I was wanting to pick up the like other point about challenges the assumption much of our research is built on. That is exactly how case studies can be used at times. And to be honest, I think they absolutely should be, because if I had a much better memory myself, and if I was a cognitive person, I could probably remember some of the cognitive case studies that I did back in Colonized International Baccalaureate. Because I know that there were quite a few case studies like back then, at least when it came to a memory, that really helped us to actually inform and also change our perspective about how like memory works. For example, I think HM was one of them. But then I do have to admit that TAN was my absolute favourite case study to read. So I think it was the very first psychology thing I actually ever covered with a bronchus aphasia. So the second one is increased risk of dementia in adults with ADHD. And this I also cover in my book, Dementia Psychology. Much of the research on attention deficit hyperactivity disorder focuses on the challenges and the potential benefits of living with a condition as a child and as an adult who has grown up with ADHD. But ADHD can also develop later in life, and though adult ADHD is distinct in various ways from childhood ADHD, less is known about it. Now, a study in GEMMA Network Open of more than 100,000 older adults has revealed a worrying implication. A diagnosis of adult ADHD was associated with a nearly 3 times greater increase of developing dementia, including Alzheimer's. So I think the main two things that I want to say about this is that, well, no, actually three though. So first of all, like ADHD is definitely not something to like stigmatize or like hate on, because as I've spoken about before in previous podcast episodes, I really forget what podcast episode it was because we've done so many now, thankfully. Well, I did do an entire podcast episode before about why ADHD is a cognitive strength for, and not a like disability, for example. Secondly, we definitely need more research on it because I've never heard of adult ADHD before. This is like useful to know. Because this does help to combat one of the stereotypes that only children can develop ADHD, but also now it turns out that adults can as well. So more research is definitely needed into that because I know ADHD is of course comes from neurodivergence, but what makes the brain want to change itself so it's neurodivergent all of a sudden? That would be quite interesting to know. For example, would it be a genetic factor? Would there be an environmental factor, or maybe even a life event that causes the brain to suddenly change it? That would actually be really interesting to know more about. I might have to like look it up after I record this. And finally, the dementia finding. So this is quite tragic. This is definitely quite concerning. And I think that we definitely need to know more about this because is there a way that we can actually decrease this? Or maybe even reverse it? So dementia is mainly caused by the buildup of proteins. So it'd be interesting to find out why do people with ADHD, or to be honest, adult ADHD, why are they more likely to develop these proteins in the brain? Interesting. But again, that research isn't the only answer. So the final one is, robotic helpers leave humans switched off. This, I think, is actually quite worrying. Anyone who's participated in a group project will know that teamwork doesn't always make us more effective. Yes, I know that from personal experience. And actually, like, funny aside notes, this is why my master's dissertation and, like, supervisor actually hasn't assigned me anyone else to my project, because she absolutely doubts that having another student help me would actually, in, like, approve the project, and she actually thinks that anyone else would actually be a hindrance, which I completely agree with, to be honest. But more on that in the personal update. In fact, it can actually lead to social loathing, where our motivation to be productive decreases and we start to rely on others to carry us. Taking our foot off the pedal, like this isn't particularly likely to happen when we don't see our own work as having much value, or more when a co-worker is performing particularly well. Much of the research into social loathing has understandably looked at the phenomenon in relation to humans, but our modern era begs the question of what do we do the same when working with robots? And then the researcher then like goes on to talk about how what happens, the humans actually put in like less effort and they actually don't spot defects as much as the robots, so but they basically like a switch off. So that's quite interesting, and I think that's largely true though, because I think that like nowadays we are very reliant on robots, like automatic checkers, sensors, etc., to actually find out like what's well with different bits and the pieces, which I think as a science fiction writer, I think that's golden, and that has a lot of like story ideas, but I also think it's a bit concerning, and it will also be quite interesting to see how as we move more and more towards artificial intelligence, how bad does this effect actually get? So quite interesting, and I think if there are any psychology researchers listening, definitely look into that, because I think that will hold a lot of useful implications for the future. So I hope you enjoy the psychology news section. So let's move on to the personal update. So we're moving on to the personal update. So this week has definitely been entertaining. I've definitely learned a lot. And this has actually been a really good week overall though. So finally, I'm really, really happy to say that my study actually got ethical approval, and I'm actually like setting up, and I'm actually starting to get research participants in there for my own like study though. So what my study's on is that it's on the mental health benefit of wearing gender affirming clothing on transgender youths. This, I think, is actually a brilliant topic, though, because as we've seen, your previous other like podcast episodes, the rates of suicide, self-harm, etc. are all really, really high in trans youth. And basically, the psychology literature has said, oh, right, so the way that we decrease all of this, like really negative mental health outcomes in transgender people is through medical and social transitioning. Okay, it's great that we know this, but of course there are two main problems. Firstly, because the medical stuff is more political, and because most of the research is done by medical professionals, to my utter horror, psychology is sort of behind the curve there. But to be honest, all of this feels really brand new, to be honest. So the medical stuff is quite advanced, and the social side though, and what the social transitioning in like includes is the stuff like name changes, using different pronouns, the clothing like that you wear, telling other people that you're trans, etc. So we know all of that works to improve mental health, but we don't know any specifics. So I really wanted to narrow down on the clothing angle, which my family basically laughed at, because I am not a fashionable person. I mean, I have no interest in clothes. I could not care less about the brand I'm wearing. Like, I am perfectly happy with Matalan clothing, which is actually, like, quite funny. And for the international audience, Matalan, I would say it's quite cheap. I would say quite cheap clothes. Clothes that are, like, it's definitely not the cheapest on the market. If I wanted to do that, I would actually, like, go to a Primark. But basically, very cheap. No designer stuff at all, and basically clothes are just clothes to me. So the fact that I'm doing basically clothing research, people are actually finding quite funny. So when my study is now live, and I mean, there's a slight diversity and inclusion bullet point which I find quite funny, because at my university, and I'm like pretty sure that most universities actually like do this now. So on the research participation scheme, which is what my university calls the psychology course accredit that you actually have to get, if you are going to design a study that excludes people, there has to be another study of another way for them to take part, which for EG makes perfect sense, because you can't do EG on Afro hair, for example. So what people have to do is that they have to create a demo session just so people with Afro hair can actually come along and understand the study. That I understand. But an online study on trans people, I do not understand why I have to let cisgender people actually have to come in and actually allow them to do the study, especially when their data gets mixed up with all my other data. So that is quite annoying. Thankfully, because of how my supervisors set up the study, and I'm in Quadrix, because Quadrix have changed since I learned how to use it, I'm amazed at my supervisor, because she's really good at the formatting. So thankfully, because of how the survey is set up, people get booted out by the first question, but then they still get two course credits, which I don't understand because they've done no work. But anyway, that's quite entertaining. But I'm really glad with some of the responses that I'm getting, because it's a qualitative study. Well, sorry, that would mean I'm going to have to do tons of thematic analysis, and we're doing a pilot study at the moment. There's definitely things I want to change about the study, because some of the questions, me and my supervisor thought they were worded perfectly, but turns out some of the responses, not so much. I'm not sure if participants are getting confused, or they just aren't giving me as much detail as I want, which is a bit annoying, but that's the nature of online studies. So I might even switch it to in-person interviews, or even online interviews. I'm not sure yet. This is why research is actually quite fun. So that all happened, and I'm quite enjoying. So that was sort of the main highlight of my week. And there were two other things that I'm not quite ready to talk about yet, because one was quite bad. The other one is actually quite interesting, and I do want to talk about it because I think this will benefit a lot of master's students, but I want the other pieces that I fall into a place yet. But I do have a podcast guest coming on mid to late next year, because who's basically coming on to talk about PhDs, because that's when he's actually going to get his. So that conversation I'm really excited about. And because I do want to get more guests on, but the problem is my stutter and me trying to find people, and it's definitely not ideal. So it does make interviewing for me really hard, to the fact that I actually hate interviewing. But I do want to gain more confidence, and I do want to become better at it, because I mean, like, my experience, the psychology research I find, that's all well and good, but there's some areas I will never be able to talk about, like PhDs, because I do not want a PhD. I seriously don't. So if I can find other people that I can interview quite easily, then that's actually going to be really useful for me, but also for all of you. And as always, I always love to hear your thoughts and feelings on today's episode. So you can always email me, connorwiley@connorwiley.net. You can always leave a comment at the show notes at connorwiley.net/podcast. And you can always tweet on Twitter at @SciFiWiley. Or leave a comment on the Facebook post at Connor Wiley, Psychology Author. I always love to hear from all of you, because it really helps make the podcast feel more like a conversation. And today's episode has been sponsored by a brand new book, Gamification of Autism, A Guide to Clinical Psychology, Cyberpsychology, and Mental Health. So I really enjoyed this book because this was something that I did during my placement gym a few years ago. And this topic, like as I mentioned in the introduction, really did harden me as a researcher, because when you get into a field like this, then you really start to see how weird some of this research is, and basically how this got published is beyond me, because many of them did not use control groups. So you might find that the game or the app works, but you don't know that it worked overall against other people. So from a lot of this research, you can't say that they only work for autistic people. You can't say they're any better than anything else. And my biggest bugbear was most of them were pilot studies, which are very small scale. And pilot studies, they're all well and good, because I'm doing one at the moment, but they're not full studies and they're not very powerful. So that was really annoying, and quite frankly, I hated it. So this area has got a lot of quite interesting stuff though. And if you want to go into research, or if you want to understand mental health research, I would say definitely get this book, because it's a lot of fun. You definitely get some of my voicey comments on it. And yeah, I mean, I did have a blast writing this book though, because I mean, it's really fun to actually criticize research properly. So that is Gamification of Autism, A Guide to Clinical Psychology, Cyberpsychology, and Mental Health. Available at all major ebook retailers, and you can order the paperback and hardback version from Amazon, local bookstore, or local library if you request it. So whilst I'm buying books that helps to support the creation and the editing of the podcast, my time is sponsored by my wonderful patrons. And if you wanted to become a patron and get tons of great rewards, then you can by heading over to patreon.com/ The Psychology Wire Podcast. So that's enough for the personal update. Let's move on to the content part of today's episode. So we're moving on to the content part of today's episode. So we're going to be talking about Introduction to the Gamification of Autism. So but this is an extract from the book, and whilst there are a lot of like references to actually today's podcast episode, I actually won't read out the citations or the references, simply because some of them are quite hard to pronounce and it does disrupt the flow of the podcast episode. So if you wanted to see the citations and the references, then please head over to the blog post at connorwiley.net/podcast. So let's dive into it. Moving on to the first chapter of the book, we need to understand the topic at a general level, because if you're anything like me, before I really started to investigate this topic, then you might not know a few things. Since I've always loved autism research, finding out more about it and trying to help people, but that seriously doesn't mean I knew anything about gamification. And what I tend to find when I talk to someone about what I did on my placement year, and that I did a literature review on the topic, I find that people knew what gamification was as a definition. They were clueless to know that this was used in autism effectively. As a result, in this chapter, we're going to be talking about what are interventions, gamification and autism to make sure everyone is on the exact same page for the rest of the book. That's what we're going to look at now. Therefore, using technology and combining it with psychological interventions is not new, because it is only increasing given how technology can be used to motivate and engage users. And I feel that we are definitely at a point where our technology is good enough that it can definitely be used on a wide range of conditions, thankfully. Some examples of technology that can be used in interventions include serious games, more on that later, structured oriented video games designed for learning, as well as therapy in a fun environment, and game-based interventions. Again, we will talk a lot on how these different pieces of technology and games are used in clinical interventions. The most important thing about all of them is that by using technology to encourage motivation and learning, we are able to overcome some serious limitations of more traditional psychotherapy. For example, we are aware that an autistic person cannot sit down for very long and that they lose interest very quickly. This makes it very, very difficult to get them to engage with an hour-long therapy session, so technology can be useful in this task. Nonetheless, I certainly think one of the most interesting and possibly exciting things to note here is that this combination of technology and intervention is basically a brand new frontier that needs to be explored in greater depth. For example, we need the technologically aided interventions to be created in the first place, so that would definitely be exciting for developers, but we also need to test it on autistic children. Again, that's another new exciting area, yet we need to empirically test these technologically aided interventions too, and that's the entire point of this book. I want to show you the current research and the state of this area, and hopefully inspire some of you to improve it for future generations. What are interventions? In the rest of this book, we're going to see the term interventions an awful lot, and normally in my books, this refers to the types and forms of psychotherapy, yet in this book, the term interventions is going to be used as sort of an umbrella term to talk about all the different examples of serious games and gamification, as well as all the serious games and examples of gamification mentioned in the book have been used to emotionally and socially train children with autism spectrum disorders. Additionally, before I start giving you a definition and talk more about autism, I want to say that I hate the term disorder for any psychological condition, even more so for autism, because it is a very biomedical model term of thinking, and I hate the biomedical model. I'm much more holistic than that. Since this model sees autism as a pathology that needs to be cured, and that is utter rubbish. I hate that term with an utter passion. I hope you can tell it in my voice. Hate it. But I've already written that argument in tons of different places, so I will be leaving it out of this book. What is autism? Therefore, autism spectrum conditions refers to a wide range of neurodevelopmental conditions that can be characterized by repetitive behaviors, impaired social skills, and intense interests. Moreover, the main reason why autism is of interest to the gamification literature is because of the autism population increasing, and that I think is a very interesting term in itself, mental health services are of course looking for cheap alternatives to the traditional early years interventions. Some of the most common interventions include dance/movement therapy, cognitive behavioural therapy, and psychopharmacological interventions. But the autistic community is increasingly becoming interested in interventions that use games and technology. For example, games have increasingly been used in school environments with recent years. And all of these are points that they do have citations and references, so definitely check out the blog post if you want to see more. One of the reasons for this is because all autistic children have been deemed to the virtual environment as more predictable than non-virtual environment, so they are more likely to last in virtual environments for longer. Personally, I'm not exactly sure why the phrase children have been deemed has that been used, because I think that sounds a little cold and uncaring towards children. But that's what academia is like at times. And I mean, I do quite like academic papers sometimes, because you can always tell the author's position well by their word choice. Because what I tend to find is researchers that have clinical experience tend to use more helpful language, like clients, service users, conditions. But academics that have never had to interact with too many people, they tend to use the more harmful or the less helpful language, like disorders, problems, patients, etc. So yes, that is very much what academia is like at times. As well as the virtual environment examples is a good one to show how we're using technology can help all autistic people cope better when they might not be able to do as well in their physical or real-world environments. This is something else we'll explore later on. As a result of this increased interest, a lot of ASC interventions are starting to adopt and become comprised of digital interventions, allowing people with autism to improve their symbolic play, communication, as well as social skills. In addition, and what I think is very good about all of this, is that having a digital component of interventions isn't hard to achieve, and this can be very seamless, considering the high video game use is often reported in ASCs. The problems we learn about. However, I will be the first to admit that as great as all of this understanding is about what serious games are, gamification, and what autism is, there is a major problem with this area of research. The problem is actually so problematic that it was actually one of the first things that interested me in the topic when my supervisor suggested it. Mainly because I think back then, I thought he was joking, but he actually wasn't. And this problem is that the evidence base for the effectiveness of serious games and similar interventions is very limited, as well as there are even some studies and researchers that question the very need for specific games in the first place. Although I will note up front here that even though I am mentioning these studies, of course I am the very, very last person that would ever deny that autistic people do face challenges and difficulties in the world. Because if I was denying that, I would not have written this book and I would not have done podcast episodes on autism. Yet I am highlighting that there is evidence that serious games aren't needed considering the effectiveness of non-specialist games. But that's something that we explore later on. Anyway, the major problem with the gamification literature is that many of these studies are mere proof of a concept test, and they are comprised of small, inadequate samples. And believe me, these studies do not know the definition of ecological validity. They're useless at that concept. And this, I think, is actually rather alarming because when we consider the increased interest in the development of the gamification of by the autistic community, it's in appalling to that we examine the area to see how empirical it is by looking to understand the field's current weaknesses and areas of a potential improvement. And oh yes, there are some serious areas for improvement, and that is why this is such a great topic to explore. So as I mentioned earlier, this book was a lot of fun to explore. This book was a lot of fun to research, and I think this was sort of a highlight of my placement year, as I really could sink in and to be honest to that with this research area. That was so horrific. It was actually quite laughable, because I do mention this in the book of light at some point, but when I was sorting through the 1,000 plus papers, now if I drunk, and I don't drink, you could easily turn into a drinking game, which is where if you found any studies with less than 10 participants in, you could take a shot. You would not last 10 studies, because that is how bad the research is, especially when you start looking and thinking about the other flaws in the research methodology. It's a really interesting topic, and I really hope that you found today's episode useful, because I know that I did. And if you know anyone who would find today's episode useful, then please share it with them. I'm always really grateful when you wonderful people help spread the word about the podcast. And if you want to learn more, definitely check out Gamification of Autism, a guide to clinical psychology, cyber psychology, and mental health, available from all major ebook retailers. And you can order the paperback and hardback version from Amazon, your local bookstore, or local library. And if you wanted to become a patron, then definitely head on over to patreon.com/thepsychologyworldpodcast. So have a great day, everyone, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. Please remember to like the video and subscribe to the YouTube channel and follow the podcast on your favourite podcast app. And if you wanted to learn more, then please check out the backlist of the podcast episodes or my books at conwhiteley.net. So have a great day, and I'll see you next time.